From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. As you've probably heard by now, the federal government ran out of spending authority at 11 p.m. Illinois time yesterday. It's the first full shutdown since 2019 during President Trump's first administration. This time, Trump says he has plans.
Well, the Democrats want to shut it down, so when you shut it down, you have to do layoffs. So we'd be laying off a lot of people that are going to be very affected, and the Democrats, they're going to be Democrats. As you know, no country can afford to pay for illegal immigration, health care for everybody that comes into the country, and that's what they're insisting. And obviously, I have an obligation to not accept that. That would affect everybody. You know, when I see what we're doing with AI and all the plants that are opening up in the country, $17 trillion is coming. And if you compare that to Biden, Biden had, in 4 years, less than a trillion. We have $17 trillion, more than that. I think it's going to be much more than that, David. By the end of this year, I think it's going to be far over that. It's a record. It's already a record in 8 months. It's a record by a lot.
Okay, there was a lot there. The key point for our discussion came at the beginning, and that's that the president seems eager to lay off a lot of federal workers and, quote, they're going to be Democrats. Throughout the hour today, we're talking about what this means for Illinois. Joining me now is one of the 536 elected officials at the center of this dispute, Democratic Congressman Sean Casten. He represents Illinois' 6th District, essentially the inner ring west and southwest suburbs of Chicago, including Villa Park, Downers Grove, Oak Lawn, Orland Park. He has been in the House since 2019. Sean Casten joins me live. Congressman, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Again, listeners, we are live with Representative Casten today. He'll be with us for the first half of the show. What questions do you have? What do you think of the government shutting down today? Whom do you blame for this? You can join our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. I should also say we have extended invitations to all three Republican members of Illinois' congressional delegation, Congressman Mike Bost, Darren LaHood, and Congresswoman Mary Miller. They have not yet responded. We hope to have them on soon. So, Congressman Sean Casten, I want to start by asking your top-line reaction to where we are now, how things have played out in the past few days.
I mean, just really sad and really frustrated. We all knew exactly what the stakes were on both sides of the aisle, that in order to fund the government, you need a simple majority in the House and you need a supermajority in the Senate. And so there is no way to fund this unless you've got, you know, some agreement between on a bipartisan basis. We as on the Democratic side of the aisle were fairly consistent throughout this process that in light of all of the, you know, the horrific cuts to our healthcare system that have been done in the first part of the Trump administration, you know, there's some 12, 13 million Americans who are going to lose their health insurance because of these cuts. And when you staple that the fact that the tax credits for the ACA, the subsidies that a lot of your listeners receive, will expire at the end of this year if we don't renew them, which would put another roughly 2 million people out of health insurance. We got to fix that. And this is the moment to fix it, in part because it's, you know, it's a point of leverage, I suppose, but also because by law, the notices go out from insurers on October 1st, that's today, that your health insurance premiums are going to go up or you're not going to have access anymore. And so this was a chance to get it done. And we instead spent the last couple of weeks in this very maximalist negotiating posture where we were told to pound sand. You just had to accept what was on offer. And we should either ignore health care, which was unacceptable, or in the alternative, just trust that this will be dealt with at some later point when there is no leverage on the table in spite of all the cuts to health care that have happened on a partisan basis up to this point. And so here we are, in spite of being there all day yesterday, in a shutdown without an obvious way out.
So Gallup recently they do this survey every month where they ask people, what do you think is the most important problem facing the country today? And far and away, the number one issue is the government / poor leadership. Immigration comes in second. The economy in general comes in third. Healthcare is way down the list. 3% of the respondents to this survey said that was their top priority. Why is this the fight that you think or you know, the hill that Democrats are fighting on. Choose your metaphor.
I suppose we could have picked any number of other things. Obviously, there's a whole lot of pieces of this, the current funding structure that, as a Democrat, I disagree with. I'm personally pretty upset about all the cuts to the climate programs, which, whether or not that polls well, is that's going to determine whether we leave a better planet for our kids. In the immediate case, though, we knew that these subsidies were expiring at the end of this year. We also know, setting aside where, and I haven't seen the polling you're referring to, but there isn't a rural district in America right now that isn't aware that they've got a hospital that either has shut down or is about to shut down, a community health center that's going away. And we are sailing into that window right now with our eyes wide open for those of us in government. And it's going to be the most pressing issue that's going to hit a lot of people really quickly.
We heard President Trump's the clip from him there, and the administration has basically threatened mass firings from federal agencies in a shutdown scenario, as opposed to the furloughs that have generally happened in previous shutdowns. I wonder how you and your colleagues are thinking about that possibility, and you know, what effect that could have on the functioning of the government in the long term.
Well, so number one, we should be really clear. What the president suggested he was going to do is completely illegal. The reason we even have shutdowns is because of the Anti-Deficiency Act, which is an old law. Don't quote me on this. I think it's from the 70s, but it essentially says that government cannot spend money or change the course of how money is being spent in the absence of congressional action if the money hasn't been authorized. And so when we run in a fiscal year, you get to the end of fiscal year, if you don't have appropriations done, the government cannot continue to spend money. But the flip side of that also applies. They can't terminate congressional programs simply because the money isn't there for them. Congressman Walkinshaw from Virginia has a really good op-ed out about this today, walking through all the legality of it. But what Trump is basically saying is, I intend to break the law. If that's the case, we will of course do everything we can with the courts to enforce the law. But he doesn't have that right. I think as a political matter, there's a much more troubling point of, I have never won 100% of the vote in my district. Nobody has ever won 100% of the vote, as far as I can tell, not in a fair election at least. But we all know that once we're elected, we represent everybody who lives in the area that we are privileged to represent. And to have a president of the United States say that I'm going to selectively hurt people because I think they didn't vote for me, or even hurt people who do vote for me but happen to live in cities or states where most of the people didn't. That's deeply anti-American. It's deeply opposed to the whole idea of public service, which we would hope inspires all of our public officials. And I think it informs some of what you had mentioned in that Gallup poll. When people say that they feel like our government is broken, it is not helped when public officials say, I'm going to try to break government and make it hurt some Americans. And that's essentially what the president of the United States is saying.
Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're speaking with Congressman Sean Casten, Democrat, represents the 6th District in the Chicago suburbs of Illinois. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. We did ask people in our texting group also what they think about the shutdown. David in Mount Morris, I'm going to say, pardon the allusion here, but he says, my biggest question about all of this is, when is Congress going to grow a pair and start implementing its checks and balances, take back control from a president who's apparently governing through executive orders only, and make public servants just that, public servants again? It would seem that too many members of Congress, both Democrat and Republican, have forgotten who they work for. Since Citizens United, you all seem to be working for the 1% of the American people, and the other 99% get symbolic legislation. Congressman Casten, what do you say to David?
Without maybe repeating the exact framing, I can tell you that it really, really bothers me that it has become partisan for Congress to act as a check and balance, or for Congress to defend our powers, as laid out in the Constitution Congress has the power of the purse. We're the ones who set the funding levels. And as we find ourselves in a position now where the Republican leadership doesn't want to challenge Donald Trump, even when Donald Trump is clearly breaking the law, is clearly saying, I'm going to refuse to spend money that Congress has appropriated, or openly breaking the law, these attacks on extrajudicial killings of these boats in Venezuela. This is a huge problem. Why is there no oversight? The answer is there's no oversight because the majority controls the gavels, they control the committees, and they have shut down our ability to do that oversight. On our Financial Services Committee, we introduced a motion to try to subpoena the financial records from JP Morgan related to Jeffrey Epstein, of who he paid money to. That was blocked on a straight party line vote. It's not because we didn't try to get it, it's because we didn't have the votes. To the caller's, separate point about Citizens United and the corrupting influence of money in politics, I think Citizens United was a terrible decision. I have co-sponsored and consistently pushed for legislation to undo the damage of Citizens United, to get rid of the corrupting influence of money in politics. And you may or may not believe me, given the seat that I sit in. I have certainly seen some issues where a huge amount of outside money sways some boats. They're less often than you would think. I think generally speaking, people give money to candidates who agree with their cause. They don't expect candidates to change their opinion after they give them money. If that wasn't true the case, I'd be getting a lot more from money from, I don't know, the NRA would probably support me if they thought that my opinions were up for sale. I do think, though, that the appearance of corruption from money in politics is many times more toxic than the actual corruption. Because if you lose the faith in the government, as it sounds like the caller may have, you lose what democracy is built on. And I'm not saying that corruption isn't there. I'm not saying money in politics isn't bad, but all of us in public office should be committed to removing even the appearance of corruption, before the corruption itself manifests, even if it never does.
So we're talking today because of this shutdown that began at midnight Eastern time last night. What you talked about the idea that, negotiating with Republicans and getting assurances or putting into this legislation changes to the to or undoing some of the changes to health care that were done in the as it's called, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act earlier this summer. Why do you think that that would be good enough, right? I mean, there was an agreement that some Democrats made with Republicans earlier this year to fund the government at a certain level, and then we saw the administration. I mean, we know this very well at Public Media, right? We lost our funding this year, even though that had been part of a prior agreement Democrats had made with Republicans. Why do you think that even making these assurances, you've said you believe the administration is acting lawlessly, why do you think they would abide by whatever compromise you might come up with at this time?
So I'll tell you, that is a great question, and it really goes to the heart of one of the reasons why this particular shutdown is so painful, because at the end of the day, trust is the currency of the realm. And in a country based on rule of law, if your negotiating partner is not constrained by the law, it is really hard to have a constructive negotiation. If you read between the lines a bit of some of the statements that have come out of Leader Jeffries and Leader Schumer, they've fairly consistently said that our negotiating position is that we need to protect people's health care, the ACA tax credits, and need to have ironclad guarantees that that will get done. Rosa DeLauro, the ranking member of the Appropriations Committee, has been working with her parties in the Senate and House to try to delineate what those ironclad guarantees would be. That gets a little wonky and more in the details, but these are things that need to be put in place precisely because there is a lack of trust that a law from Congress, if that's all you have, will be honored by this administration. And even if they are ultimately held in check by the courts, that, as you know well, in your situation, justice is slow, and sometimes justice delayed is justice denied. And so there have been parallel conversations about what the text would have to be to make those protections sufficiently ironclad. We'll have to see where that gets to. As it sits right now, they're refusing on the policy premise, much less on the guarantees. One of the ideas that I've been advocating for, along with some of my colleagues, is there are some federal laws, particularly the Federal Records Act, where if you are an employee of the executive branch and you break the Federal Records Act, this is a law that requires preservation of all the records you create while a federal employee on federal grounds using federal computers, that you can be held personally liable in civil court. And some of my colleagues have been proposing legislation that says that if you withhold congressional funding in your capacity as an executive branch officer, you can be held liable in civil court by people who are affected. I think that's a rather elegant idea because it would put people, like Elon Musk, like big balls, in a position where they would have to be exposed in civil court to people who were hurt. I don't know that that's the way it's going to get through, but those are the kinds of things that we're talking about as far as creating some more durable accountability against a,
Yeah.
let's be honest, lawless administration.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll have more with Congressman Sean Casten when we return. 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. For the first part of our program today, we're talking with Illinois Congressman Sean Casten, represents the 6th District in some of the west and southwest suburbs of Chicago. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. 800-222-9455. I do want to make note, we invited all three members of Illinois' congressional delegation on the Republican side of the aisle to join us on the program. We hope they will respond and join us soon. Congressman, I want to talk about a couple of other issues that are in the news, particularly here in Illinois. And that has to do with this talk of sending the National Guard to Chicago. And even absent that, you have men in masks with Velcro and green uniforms and cowboy hats and helmets patrolling Michigan Avenue in downtown Chicago, the Tony Shopping District. How are you thinking about what is happening here?
I have no good words. It's the city I love is being overrun by jackbooted thugs. There's no nicer way to put it. If on the legality side of this, the law is very clear that the president does not have the authority to send the National Guard in without the request of the governor. I talked before about a lawless administration. If they do things that are illegal and we depend on the courts to shut them down, that's a slower process. And I'm very happy that our governor has been encouraging people to take video and document and call this out. Obviously, don't get yourself in trouble. But the sunlight remains the best disinfectant. With respect to the ICE officials who are here, I think it's a tremendous overreach. I think it's really bad policy. I think it is having people in federal law enforcement who don't have their names on their uniforms, who are wearing masks, walking through the streets, terrorizing people. Makes everybody less safe because somebody who genuinely wants the support of federal law enforcement now no longer knows whether to trust you. When I talk to local law enforcement officials in the district, most are really happy that Illinois has sanctuary state, sanctuary city laws because it allows them to do community-based policing where people come and alert them to more major crimes without fearing whether someone in their house who might have mixed status but is otherwise a law-abiding citizen might be exposed. So the net result of this is to make us all less safe. But strictly speaking, the president does have the authority to deploy ICE officials around the country and engage in enforce immigration law. I think it's a question of judgment sending those in. But I just really fear right now for the excesses of what's going on for. The more that comes out, the more it is clear that this is politically motivated. I don't know if you saw the tape that came out yesterday of the ICE officials announcing that they plan to go and arrest the mayor of New York and what became the situation with Congresswoman McIver. saying that they were doing that on the direction of the deputy attorney general and to turn off their body cams. That is clearly a political weaponization of the government. And for a country that is based on the rule of law, how long does it take to restore that if we've given people cause to question it?
Well, that's actually a great question. I've been having that conversation with other elected officials this year. What, abolish ICE was considered pretty bad politics for a long time, but at this point, how do you come back from where we are? And an agency that is trying to staff up even further and using this, these sort of tactics as a recruitment tool.
It's really frightening. In the, and I'm not gonna call it by its name, in the big ugly bill, there is within there a huge expansion in the size of ICE, from a budget perspective that would make it bigger than all of our other federal law enforcement agencies. That's in spite of the fact that on a criminal basis, documented immigrants to the United States commit crimes at a much lower rate than native-born Americans, and undocumented immigrants create crimes at a much lower rate than documented immigrants. That's entirely unsurprising. Those communities are pretty vulnerable, and the last thing they want to do is get into a bad situation. But by prioritizing law enforcement resources to go after after immigrants or even people who look like immigrants, let's be honest about who they're targeting, we are taking resources off of other cases. And so we're seeing a huge shutdown. There's been reporting of drug interdictions have collapsed in the U.S. because we're not providing resources to people like the ATF. I met with the ATF officers in Chicago recently, who said that they're on a hiring freeze. They can keep all the people that they have, but as people retire, they can't replace them. And that's as they're ramping up these other enforcement. White collar crime is basically not being enforced right now. I had a conversation with folks over the weekend who said that there's within the Department of Justice, they're being told that if Brad Bondi, Pam Bondi's brother, is your lawyer, to not prosecute the case. That is horrible. This is banana republic kind of stuff. Congress should absolutely be having oversight hearings, should be bringing all that to account. And we are unable to do it as long as we're in a position where, Mike Johnson basically serves at Trump's pleasure. And I'm not saying that to be crass. He knows he got his job because Trump turned on Kevin McCarthy. And so Congress is not doing the oversight that's necessary to bring this back into account. But so we're left with just this huge expansion of lawless behavior. I give all that long background because, yes, of course we want to make sure that we have resources to defend our borders. And, I certainly don't know any Democrats who would argue that we should abolish ICE. But elected Democrats. But I think it is completely appropriate to say we should not have expanded ICE's budget to the degree that it was expanded in the big, beautiful bill, big, ugly bill. We should go back to where they were before, and we should prioritize law enforcement on fighting actual crimes that are being committed, not just targeting specific minority groups in the United States.
We're coming to the end of our time together. You've pointed out on social media that the Trump administration, not so popular. Some of the recent polls show him around a 40% approval rating. And yet, Democrats aren't so popular either. There's a new NPR PBS Marist poll that has congressional Democrats with a 62% disapproval rating. And that's compared to 55% disapproval for their Republican colleagues. How do you change that?
Well, I remember when I was first running in 2018, I flipped a seat and we were part of the biggest freshman class since Watergate. And on on the day of my election, we're sitting there and everybody was saying, this is generational change in Congress. And in that huge wave election, the 90% of all incumbents on the ballot won, and Congress had a 30% approval rating. There's one answer to that, one explanation for that, that says that people have a much more positive view of their elected official than they do of the letter hanging after that official's name. And I think there's probably some truth to that. I always like to joke that if you ask people whether they like Dr. Pepper, you probably get a different answer than you ask people if they like Cherry Cola. These are synonyms, but one of them is a brand and one of them is a thing. I think that's also true for politicians. I think the separate issue there is that if we don't do a better job in the long term of addressing campaign finance reform, of addressing gerrymandering, then we make it easier and easier for unpopular people to get elected, which is the opposite of the way that Congress should work. And my hope from this moment is that, we really use this to turn into something more positive. We've had dark moments in our history before. The Civil War comes to mind, the period leading into the Civil Rights era comes to mind. And we have emerged better out of that because we redoubled our commitment to democracy. Whether that was expanding who could vote, whether that was taking off some of the barriers that made it harder for certain groups of people to vote, even if they were eligible. And I think we're past due to have, really fall back in love with democracy as a society, and let's expand it. Let's push for permanently getting rid of gerrymandering. Let's push for permanently undoing, the Citizens United decision. Let's go beyond that. Let's have conversations about the structure of the Electoral College, the structure of the Senate. Why is it that we get to a point where I think at this point the majority of the justices on the Supreme Court were appointed by presidents who lost the popular vote. Those realities make people less confident of our democracy, and we can either respond to that by giving up on democracy or by really doubling down on it. And I hope we take the double down door.
Congressman Sean Casten represents Illinois' 6th District. He's a Democrat. Thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.